Very different type of sermon today, very fact-loaded message today, but hopefully we can grow together in our understanding of an important issue. Strengthening our resolve. I will confess today that there's one type of television show that I do not like at all, and I really try to avoid. And this is despite certain people who are near and dear to me who love them. I apologize if I'm maligning one of your beloved television escapes, but frankly, I just don't get it. I'm absolutely stunned, I really am, that Survivor is in its 29th season. I find that stunning. Big Brother is still on TV. That's ridiculous. The Bachelor and Bachelorette, please, come on. None of these shows are, in fact, reality at all. Recently, there was a reality show in particular that really pushed the envelope of logic. Were you actually tempted? I don't know if I should ask for hands on this one. Were you actually tempted to watch a recent TV show called Temptation Island? Who dared watch that thing? Oh, a lot of not me. One magazine described the show this way. The fabulously tacky Fox Network has come up with the most fabulously tacky reality show of them all, Temptation Island. Four hapless couples romp with two dozen babes and hunks on a Caribbean island for fun, humiliation, and profit. Goes on to say, the four couples, each with some strains in their relationship, are sent to a Caribbean island. There they are separated by gender and left for 2 weeks in the titillating company of members of the opposite sex. The gals babeliciously comely and the boys hunkerifically handsome. Will the couples remain true to each other, or will the island's instincts take over? Oh, come on. It's not really much of a plot, is it? But it made for voyeuristic fun, I guess, for millions of people who turned in to watch it. In the end, though, they were tempted on the island, but none of the four couples actually broke their relationship up and took on another partner. It was lousy TV, but to put the word temptation, it put the word temptation back in everybody's vocabulary, didn't it? The truth is, we all live, you and I, on Temptation Island. Well, it's not really Temptation Island, is it? It's Temptation World. And only the Bible really tells us how to deal with this. Verse 13 tells us in our lesson today that temptation is a common human experience. But not all of us respond to temptation in the correct way. Oscar Wilde, maybe you've heard of him, once said, the only way to get rid of temptation is to yield to it. Later on, he said, I can resist everything except temptation. The book of James tells us that temptation does not come from God. He writes, let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself tempts no one. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away from by his own lusts and enticed. Then the lust, when it is conceived, bears sin, and the sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. Don't be deceived, my beloved brothers. There's a contemporary author by the name of Peter Gomes who contends that temptation is the single greatest source of human anxiety. In the thousands of people that he's counseled over the years in his ministry, he's found that the problem of temptation is at the heart of every personal anxiety he's ever encountered. If everyone in this world is tempted, what is the difference then between temptation and sin? Well, Martin Luther once said that the temptation is like a bird flying over your head. You can't prevent that from happening. But sin is when you let the bird build a nest in your hair. I have in my office on a filing cabinet a little magnetic plaque that was given to me when I was in Toronto that reads, lead me not into temptation. I can find it myself. And there's some real truth in that little expression, I think. I was thinking about the reasons why we give in to temptation, especially given our focus today on addiction and its relationship to poverty. And just to clarify, addictions are a much broader subject than just substance abuse. Addictions can include a wide range of human behaviors like gambling, food, sexuality, and even how we are addicted to technology. Just watch any of those gamers, especially young people. Nor dare we become smug in our self-assurance that we're not prone to temptation, for Paul tells us that all temptations are common to everyone. In approaching this difficult subject of addictions, we need to be compassionate, for all of us are prone. So where do these addiction issues come from, one wonders? Many people use substances like drugs and alcohol to relax, to have fun, to experiment, to cope with stressors. However, for some people, the use of these substances or engaging in certain behaviors can become problematic and may lead to dependence. Addiction is a complex process where problematic patterns of substance abuse and behaviors can ultimately lead to interfering with a person's life. Addictions can be broadly defined as a condition that leads to a compulsive engagement with stimuli, despite negative consequences. And this can lead to physical or psychological dependence. Addictions can be either substance-related, like opioids, which are in the news right now, or alcohol or cocaine, or they can also be process-related, such as behavioral addictions like gambling or the internet addiction. One simple way of understanding and describing addiction is to use the 4C approach. There's craving, loss of control of amount or frequency of use, compulsion to use, and continued substance use despite the consequences. Did you know that the word addiction comes from the Latin word meaning enslaved by or bound to? Anyone who has struggled to overcome an addiction or has tried to help someone to overcome one understands why this is true. Addiction exerts a long and powerful influence on the brain that manifests in three distinct ways: craving for the object of addiction, loss of control over its use, and continuing involvement in it despite adverse consequences. While overcoming an addiction is possible, the process, frankly, can be very long, it is slow, and it is complicated. And it's taken many years for researchers and policymakers to finally arrive at that understanding. In the 1930s, believe it or not, when researchers began to investigate what caused addictive behavior, they believed that people who had developed addictions were somehow morally flawed or lacking in willpower. Maybe some of you feel that way. Overcoming addiction, they thought, involved punishing miscreants or alternately encourage them to muster the will to break the habit. Fortunately, the scientific consensus has changed a lot since then. Today, we recognize addiction as a chronic disease that changes both the brain structure and its function. Just as cardiovascular disease damages the heart and diabetes damages the pancreas, addiction hijacks the brain. And recovery from addiction involves willpower, certainly, but it's not enough to just say no, which was the theme back in the 1980s, remember? Instead, people typically use multiple strategies to overcome an addiction. That could include psychotherapy, medication, self-care, just to try and break the grip. Another shift in thinking about addiction has occurred as well. For many years, experts believed that only alcohol and powerful drugs could cause an addiction. But with technology looking at the brain, they now know that some pleasurable activities such as gambling and shopping and sex can also co-opt the brain. My intention today was not to give you a primer on addiction. I just wanted you to be alert to the reality that this is what some of your neighbors in this community, maybe even someone sitting here today, is dealing with on a daily basis. Often none of us know what a family member or a neighbor or even ourselves are dealing with until there's a serious crisis that requires an intervention from a health professional or the police or a therapist. If the Apostle Paul is right, and I'm convinced he is, we need to have a healthy respect and a more redemptive response to those who are coping with this illness. If addiction is an illness, our response should be just as compassionate if it would be if one of us was suffering from cancer or heart disease or some other acute chronic problem. To not respond or to respond with indifference can be absolutely catastrophic to the person who's suffering from addiction and to their families. One of the first steps to being Christ-like to our neighbors and even our family members who are struggling is to understand how addiction and poverty is changing this community. Since addiction actually alters our brain chemistry, recovery from an addiction can be very difficult and a very lengthy process. This means, for example, that emergency housing is often required for those who are too ill to work or finding themselves homeless. We have in Simcoe 8 beds from the ASH program, which allows residents to remain for 1 year in supportive housing. I'll tell you right now, 8's not enough, not by a close margin. Access to a psychiatrist in the county of Norfolk is one of the most difficult medical professionals to see. The wait list is months long. And then there's the whole issue of documentation. Some fighting with addiction find themselves without a health card, or they have an expired health card, not to mention the required documents they need just to find a rental housing arrangement. And the one that really breaks my heart is that many who struggle with addictions report that they're socially isolated. Often in recovery, a person has burned their social bridges with their family and their friends, and loneliness makes recovery considerably more difficult. It compounds the anxiety that draws someone back into an addiction. Social stigma also affects the recovery process. What we fail to understand is that someone in the recovery process is often too fragile to be employed immediately. The physical and emotional effort that's required to recover takes 100% of a person's energy. You cannot be lazy, folks, and recover from an addiction. It's impossible. It is very hard for people in recovery to ask for help, I read in one report, because our society is based on askers. This quote refers to the fact that even when there are supports in our community, people aren't informed that the support is even there. They just don't know it's there. For example, one individual talked about when he turned 65, he started getting CPP. He's getting about $700 to $800 a month. Then he was told later on about the OAS. And when he finally applied, his monthly income went to just over $1,000 a month. And then somebody told him about the GIS. And when he finally learned about the GIS, he received quite a large lump sum as back payment and now gets $1,700 a month. But nobody told him about these programs. And the group discussed how it would be nice if when you applied for one program, you got all the information about every other related program. And what about poverty, you think? The rate of poverty in Simcoe, by statistics, is 17.2% of the population. That's a scary figure because the provincial average is 14.4. And just so we're clear, this is something Tamara talked about. No one's getting rich on Ontario Works or disability payments. It's impossible. A single person on OW receives $733 a month. If you're a couple, you get $1,136 a month, and there are small increases if you have minor age children in the home. Ontario disability payments are a little higher at $1,169 for a single person and $1,894 for a couple. And again, there are small improvements if there are children in the home. Even on minimum wage in this province, $14 an hour, a 35-hour-a-week job, a person takes home, wow, what a sum, $1,960 before taxes. And most of these jobs, they don't have benefits. In Norfolk, a bachelor's apartment runs at about $605 a month. With one bedroom, it's $744. Oh, if you can even find one. Utilities can run on average about $200 for food, and you can see why we need the Karen Cupboard and Rise and First Serving. I haven't even talked about transportation. How does a person get to work or a medical appointment? You know, taxis are expensive. They're unreliable in picking people up on time. And if a person even owns a car, it's usually an older vehicle that requires a lot of maintenance. What about daycare for a parent that wants to work? How is that for a reality that you never see on TV? This is the reality of lots of people who live in this town. Actually, 17% of us. So here's my point with all this information. As Paul says, we are all prone to temptation. And some of us, in giving into the temptation, we fall pretty hard. As Tony Campola points out, you know, the church is really good at being good Samaritans. We really are, generally. I know we mess up from time to time, but we usually respond pretty well, he says. However, as good as our Good Samaritan activities are, all we're really doing is patching people up and sending them back into the system again. Tony Campola points out that in the parable of the Good Samaritan, we find a good man who rescues someone on the road between Jericho and Jerusalem. A man who was ambushed by thieves and was beaten near death. We know from the story that the Good Samaritan bandages up the man, takes him to an inn, and pays for him to be cared for until he's recovered. It's a moving story. It motivates us to act similarly to others. The Good Samaritan did the right thing, but take the story further and ask yourself, what if every day or two, someone was attacked on that road in the same way? If this happened enough, there comes a point where being a good Samaritan is just not enough anymore. At some point, we realize that there's got to be some action that's going to stop the carnage on the road between Jericho and Jerusalem. Maybe we demand of the government that there be more patrols along that stretch of road, or better lighting if it happened today. In short, it is not enough to just care for the casualties of the system, as good as that is. But sooner or later, we've got to challenge the system that creates the casualties in the first place. God's people are to be a rescue squad. That's a marvelous thing. I encourage it. But our call is also to be light and salt to this community. Both these commodities represent influence, influence for the better. Our call is to speak for those who cannot speak for themselves or who are ignored when they do speak up. Our call is to address the spiritual, economic, and social ills that are destroying lives right here in Norfolk. So issues like affordable housing, food security, social inclusion, medical service access, livable wages or income, these aren't just government issues or issues for the poor. These are our issues. God does care about how we care for the poor and the marginalized. He's made that very clear in his word. And if we are doing anything today to stop the destruction of lives in our community, we got to get active. I hope that by hearing Tamara today, and from what I just shared with you, we can strengthen our resolve to give everyone a safe and healthy life journey.